Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, October 19th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, ISU Archivist Helps Old Buildings Tell Their Story, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Selecting photos for a book on campus buildings was like picking your favorite child, says Illinois State University archivist April Anderson. But she did manage to choose 200 favorite children for a newly published book titled simply Illinois State University that is part of Arcadia Publishing's Campus History series. Putting the book together was more than an exercise in choosing a favorite child. The process also was part scavenger hunt and part mystery challenge. For example, why do the archives have pictures of a time capsule being placed in Old Main, but none of its contents? And is it true you can, theoretically, piece together all of the so-called Altgeld castles in Illinois, of which ISU's Cook Hall is one, and create one big building? It turns out that the contents of the capsule from Old Main, the administrative building, that was the first building on the Illinois State Normal University campus, were placed in the time capsule of the Centennial Building, now known as Centennial East and Centennial West. As for the legend of the interlocking castles built in a Gothic-style design favored by then-Governor John Peter Altgeld, Anderson said, "I have not been able to prove that." Speaking of Cook Hall, it is the oldest campus building still standing, dating back to the late 1800s. Currently home to the School of Music, it opened originally as a gymnasium and even served as the library for a while. Anderson said you can learn a lot about an institution from its buildings. All these buildings have such a rich history to them, she said. Anderson will present a program about that history, The Walls Speak, Telling ISU's Story Through Its Campus Buildings, at 3 p.m. Friday on the third floor of Milner Library. There also is an exhibit on the second floor vestibule of Milner Library that displays several photos and original artifacts that are featured in the book. The exhibit will remain through December 16th. Her favorites, among favorites, include photos of the bell tower on Long Gone Old Main, Braden Auditorium under construction, and the university's longest-serving president, David Felmley, giving a lecture in Capon Auditorium. Ross Griffiths, former director of university archives at ISU, said the book allows people to explore ISU's history. Noting that ISU is Illinois' first public university, Griffiths said, "ISU really built a core part of its identity around its history. It is rightfully very proud of that history." His favorite building is Williams Hall, which Griffiths likes because the former library has interesting architectural features and represents the last of pre-war architecture. ISU is dominated by larger post-war buildings, which lack the interesting and thoughtful architecture of earlier buildings, said Griffiths, archivist at Worcester State University in Massachusetts. The cover of the book includes a 1959 photo with students milling around the area of North Hall, which no longer exists, and Schroeder Hall. "It's representative of the old and the new," said Anderson. "It's my way of saying, hey guys, remember where we came from." Dane Ward, former dean of ISU's Milner Library, said Anderson's passion for ISU comes through in the book. "This is a wonderful photographic history of Illinois State University with excellent annotations," said Ward, dean of university libraries at Appalachian State University in North Carolina. The book is a nice photographic complement to John Freed's Educating Illinois. Anderson said Freed's book, A History of the School, written for its sesquicentennial in 2007, was the first thing she read when she started working at ISU in 2011. Anderson said she used the book by the professor emeritus in preparing the photographic history of ISU. Ward, Griffiths, and Dallas Long, Associate Dean of Milner Library, were involved in making arrangements with Arcadia Publishing to produce the book. "What these books do is provide an easy reference," said Anderson. "We're able to impart a little of that history to our alumni and students." The official release date is Monday, but Anderson is hoping some of the books will arrive early for alumni to purchase at the bookstore during homecoming this weekend. The next story is headlined, "Bond Reform Looks at Why 3 Days in Jail Matters," by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. When a person can't afford to pay a small amount for bond, even 3 days behind bars can be costly when it means the loss of a job, a home, or school enrollment. Jobs, housing, family, we strip all these from people unnecessarily, said Cherise Fano Burdeen, CEO of the Pretrial Justice Institute, which is spearheading the nationwide 3 Days Count campaign for bond reform for misdemeanor suspects. In McLean County, which already is working to reduce jail time for defendants facing low-level charges, public defender Carla Barnes said even $100 bond payments are out of reach for many clients. "Those arrested on low-level offenses should not be housed in our jail system simply because they are poor. Research shows that the negative impact of these individuals are detrimental not only to them, but their entire family," said Barnes. Illinois is evaluating bond policy in the state's 24 judicial circuits as part of the 3 Days Count campaign. "We are in the information gathering stage," said Judge Kevin Fitzgerald, chief judge of the Bloomington-based 11th Judicial Circuit. In McLean County, the majority of those charged with misdemeanor offenses in 2016 spent less than 24 hours in jail before their release, according to data recently provided to the McLean County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council at Fitzgerald's request. About 70% of those booked on a low-level offense spent less than a day in jail. Another 17% stayed 24 to 72 hours, and 13% were in jail more than 72 hours. By contrast, felony suspects spent considerably more time in custody, and officials say the data show the county is achieving its goal of using the jail to hold primarily those charged with more serious crimes. "I wanted to know how many misdemeanants were held 3 days," said Fitzgerald, as part of the council's ongoing assessment of what factors contribute to the jail's population. Fitzgerald said Tuesday his request for numbers also is aligned with the Illinois Supreme Court's policy statement on pretrial practices. A committee recently established by the Supreme Court will look at how pretrial policies affect defendants who cannot afford bond. In its April policy statement, the Supreme Court said it supports models of urban and rural pretrial practices that address the unique needs of our complex system of justice while maintaining public safety and defendant accountability. An individualized review of a defendant's level of risk to the community is the best method of determining who should be released, the court said in its statement. McLean is one of 3 Illinois counties that participated in a pilot program for a pretrial assessment that scores an offender's risk for release. About 82% of those screened by court services for a misdemeanor offense are recommended for release, Sargil Rizvi, the county's pretrial services coordinator, told the Justice Coordinating Council last week. With the cost of housing 12 million jail admissions each year in the U.S. estimated at $14 billion, the movement to reform bond policies has gained momentum as communities look for ways to redirect money away from incarceration and toward mental health and other services that could reduce crime. 6 of 10 people in jail have not been to trial, with more than 80% qualifying for a public defender based on poverty, according to the Pretrial Justice Institute. "The work to reform bond policy is a marathon, not a sprint," said Burdeen. The response to the 3 days count campaign has brought an optimism not seen in previous years among supporters of bond reform, said Burdeen. Change is under consideration in many states, including about a dozen where Supreme Court justices are leading the charge for reform, said Burdeen. And here's a related story headlined, Six Inmates Waiting on Mental Facility, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. Six inmates at the McLean County Jail are waiting for beds at a Springfield mental health facility for a court-ordered transfer for treatment, and some have waited almost 3 months. McLean County Sheriff John Sandage said the delays have meant that half of the jail's booking area now serves as a mental health unit for the inmates whose mental health condition is an issue in their criminal cases. We've had one person waiting since August. This ties up our observation cells and puts a strain on staff, said Sandage. Three of the six inmates have refused medication available as part of the treatment offered at the jail, said the sheriff. Staff at a state facility have options not available at jails to achieve medication compliance. According to Megan Powers, spokeswoman for the State Department of Human Services, 16 inmates from 9 counties were waiting for beds at the state facility as of September 29th. McLean County had 4 inmates on the waiting list at that time, but that number has since grown to 6, according to the sheriff. The state is working on strategies to divert and prevent people who are at risk because of mental health issues from becoming involved in the criminal justice system, said Powers. Along with those efforts, the state is working to increase our capacity to house forensic patients by reorganizing and adding new forensic beds, said Powers. The shortage of available inpatient beds for mental health services also continues to be an issue for local hospitals, according to Stephanie Moore, Director of Nursing for Critical Care Services at Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal. We continue to see high volumes of patients with mental health conditions in our emergency department and our inpatient mental health unit, said Moore. The hospital also continues to experience considerable wait times for getting patients placed in the appropriate facility because of high demands statewide, said the nursing director. Broman is seeing a younger patient population with more severe mental health conditions, said Moore. Last year, Broman President Colleen Canaday told a local mental health panel that some patients have stayed months in the hospital's critical care unit while waiting for inpatient care at another facility. It's not uncommon for patients facing a mental health crisis to remain in Broman's emergency department for days, Canaday told the McLean County Behavioral Health Coordinating Council. The hospital's emergency department had about 2,000 visits involving mental health issues the previous year, according to Canaday. Mental health treatment for inmates became a priority for county officials after a 2012 study by the National Institute of Corrections recommended major changes in conditions for inmates with behavioral health issues. A $39 million jail addition under construction will include a mental health unit. The NIC study, requested by former Sheriff Mike Emery, estimated that about 30% of male inmates and 40% of female inmates had a history of mental illness. Here's a story entitled, Public to Critique Signs. Bloomington receives 3 new designs for downtown signage, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. The Downtown Signage Committee will unveil next month 3 new design concepts for downtown wayfinding and welcoming signs in hopes that residents find one they like. After several aldermen said they received negative feedback from their constituents about the committee's recommended Dream Big signs, the council voted unanimously September 11th to table the measure. Instead, the council approved allocating another $10,000 for the city's consultant, KMA Design, to come up with other slogan design and branding options for the council to review. Large boards showing all three looks will be presented during a public open house from 5 to 7 p.m. November 1st at the McLean County Museum of History. The boards also will be displayed from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. November 2nd in the lobby of the Monroe Center Fox & Hounds Salon and Day Spa Building, 200 West Monroe Street. Residents are encouraged to provide feedback and vote on the design they like the most. The earlier design concept featured the Dream Big slogan on red, white, and blue gateway and wayfinding signs intended to direct visitors to and around downtown. Based on council response and what people shared before the September 11th meeting and on social media, it was clear the tagline didn't connect, said Beth Wissman, who was elected committee chairwoman September 12th. KMA developed alternate concept designs at no cost to the city that are more reflective of the traditional historic heritage of the city's core, said the city in a statement issued earlier this week. The $10,000 allocated by the council for KMA to come up with new design options will stay in the signage committee's budget, said Assistant City Manager Steve Rasmussen. We had $250,000 allocated for signage, and what that was mostly going to be used for was fabricating and installing the signs, he added. Two of the design concepts now feature more of a turn-of-the-century historic motif, with the signs suspended from Victorian-style wrought iron posts and stone bases. The firm also provided a modified design using the original Art Deco look without the Dream Big tagline. In August 2016, the council approved a $62,190 contract with the Pittsburgh-based signage designer. To view the designs, people can attend one of the public displays or visit the city's website at www.cityblm.org. People can also vote online at www.cityblm.org/governments/boards-commissions/downtown-signage-committee/2017-downtown-bloomington-wayfinding. The next story is entitled Streeter OSF to spend $30.5 million. Center for Health changes to fit rural healthcare model by Paul Sweech. Streeter. OSF Healthcare Center for Health Streeter will be renovated to the tune of $30.5 million in a major step toward transforming the former St. Mary's Hospital building into a new model for rural healthcare. We're making good on our promise to meet the community's healthcare needs in a different way, Center for Health President Ken Bootke told the Pantograph at the center on Wednesday. We are excited to use Streeter as a model for other rural communities. We want the community to no longer see this as a hospital, but as a place to get healthy and stay well, Bootke said. OSF's plans are a modern and appropriate use of this early 1960s facility, said City Manager Scott Wrighton. What OSF had said they were going to do is what they're following through with, Mayor Jimmy Lansford said in a prepared statement. Peoria-based OSF Healthcare took over the former St. Mary's Hospital building, 111 Spring Street, after the Springfield-based Hospital Sisters Health System closed St. Mary's in January 2016, in a decision that devastated Streeter, a community of 13,800 people, more than an hour northeast of Bloomington Normal. OSF opened Center for Health, an outpatient center, in the former hospital building, with services including a 24/7 emergency center, rehabilitation services, diagnostic imaging, lab services, primary and specialty physician offices, occupational health, and community education. OSF is trying to attract other health and human service agencies to the center to develop it into a community center for health and wellness. So far, the LaSalle County Health Department has opened two satellite clinics, joining the American Cancer Society Patient Resource Center in the Medical Arts Building across the street from the Center for Health and North Central Behavioral Health, the area mental health agency, has opened an office in the Center for Health, Butke said. Several months ago, OSF Healthcare decided, rather than building a new Center for Health, to continue to use but renovate the former hospital building. Plans unveiled Wednesday call for exterior and interior remodeling. Work will begin in late January and be completed in July 2019, Butke said. Plans include remodeling of the first floor for a new lobby, community education space, technology bar for people to be trained to use technology, such as OSF MyChart and televisits, to help with their health care, diagnostic imaging, lab, occupational health, and chapel. The emergency center will remain. Remodeling of the second floor for rehabilitation and OSF specialty clinics, such as orthopedics and general surgery. Retaining the third floor for OSF Healthcare Cardiovascular Institute. Remodeling the fourth floor for primary care offices, now on the third floor. The new space will allow for televisit consultations with specialists. Third floor space, now used by primary care, is intended for use by community agencies, such as the Health Department, Cancer Society, and North Central. Vacating the fifth and sixth floors for possible future partnering agencies. Demolishing St. Francis Hall, the vacant 1914 and 1925 wings of the former hospital building, and replacing it with a parking lot, walking path, community garden, and new entry to the center for people attending community education programs. Demolition has been completed and site clearing is underway. And here's another healthcare story headlined. Medication abortions now available in Bloomington Normal Clinics by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Medication abortions are now being offered at the Planned Parenthood Clinic in Bloomington. Julie Lynn, a spokeswoman for Planned Parenthood of Illinois, said the clinic began offering the abortion pill to clients at the beginning of the month. Like any of our services, we want to offer the full range of reproductive health care, she said. Previously, patients had to travel to health centers in Aurora or Chicago for in-clinic abortions through Planned Parenthood. Lynn said she was unsure how many clients had used the pill so far at the Bloomington Clinic, 1319 North Veterans Parkway. The abortion pill is offered up to 10 weeks after the start of the last menstrual period. Patients take one pill, mifepristone, RU486, during a scheduled appointment and then take a second pill, misoprostol, within the next 48 hours. A follow-up appointment, including ultrasound or blood draw and birth control consultation, is scheduled during the subsequent 2 weeks, she said. Most women have a complete abortion within 4 to 24 hours after taking the second pill, but some bleeding and cramping may persist for a few days to weeks. Patients are given post-abortion self-care, medications, and a birth control method, and they are told to report any complications experienced during or after an abortion procedure to Planned Parenthood immediately. Thomas Shugalis, president of the McLean County Right to Life Committee, said he was disappointed to hear about the pills being distributed locally. I would like to know what prompted them to do this, why they are doing this, and what they hope to accomplish, he told the Pantograph on Wednesday. They have made it easier to kill a developing baby, and those that do that have blood on their hands. The abortion pill is 97% effective, according to Planned Parenthood. Before taking the pill, patients are asked to discuss the options available with Planned Parenthood counselors, discuss medical history, have laboratory tests, have an ultrasound, and read and sign documents. Patients are given a medication guide, instruction, and other information to take home, including a telephone number that is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And here's a story headlined, Council Still in Talks About Hiring Interim City Manager, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. The City Council has not chosen an interim city manager despite discussing at two executive sessions who should fill David Hale's position until a permanent replacement is found, according to Mayor Terry Renner. We have no conclusion at this point, which means we're meeting again next Monday in executive session just to talk about an interim, Renner told the Pantograph on Wednesday. The soonest the council could vote on the matter is at its November 13th meeting, so essentially we would not be able to get an offer out to somebody until after that, said the mayor. This is not usually what takes you a while to decide, added Renner. What usually takes time is hiring the city manager, and we have a pretty tight timetable in terms of hiring somebody by June 1st to replace David Hales. Hales is resigning to become Joliet's city manager, likely starting November 27th. Renner said normally the assistant city manager fills in as city manager on an interim basis until a permanent city manager is hired. While the council discussed the topic in closed session on October 9th and Monday, Renner declined to say whether a majority of the council opposes hiring Assistant City Manager Steve Rasmussen as interim city manager. In our ordinance, in his job description, and in his contract, is that the Assistant City Manager will take over when the city manager is not in town, said Renner. Rasmussen is qualified to serve as interim city manager, added the mayor. He was chief city administrator of Jefferson City, Missouri, before serving as Bloomington's assistant city manager for 3 years, noted Renner, adding, David Hales hired him, and David Hales, in a sense, rehired him over and over. And the main thing he is supposed to do is run the city in the city manager's absence. I am ready, willing, and able to serve at the council's pleasure, Rasmussen told the Pantograph Wednesday. Here's an item from the Daily Digest entitled, Citizen Watchdog Training Set. Normal. The League of Women Voters of McLean County is partnering with the Better Government Association to provide free training for the public to observe and monitor local government. The workshop will be 6 to 8 p.m. October 23rd, at First Presbyterian Church, 2000 West College Avenue, Normal. Registration is required. Call 312-821-9031, email ahader@bettergov.org, or visit www.bettergov.org. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for October 19th. Please stay tuned.